Hi, I'm Katie and you're listening to the Home Ed Voices podcast, where I talk to people about their home education adventures and experiences here in the UK. This is episode 23, and this week I'm talking to Helen from Belzebow. We talk about Helen's lap book and picture book units at Branch Out World. Helen tells us how her family tackles GCSEs and about keeping teenagers engaged in home ed groups. And now, on with the episode. This week, I'm talking to Helen, who's Belzebow on Instagram. Hello, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Hello, it's nice to be here.
Yay! Okay, first question, tell me a bit about your family.
Okay, there's me, and I have three children. My eldest is 35, and my middle one is 18, and my youngest is 14. And I also have a grandson. My eldest and his partner just had a baby this year. Hooray! So I'm a grandma.
That's very cute. So how, why did you start home educating?
Let me see. It's a bit difficult, really. There were an awful lot of reasons why I started. Yeah. Partly because well, my eldest was he came out of school when he was seven. He was the first lot to do SATs.
Right.
So that had a bearing on it. There was problems at the school. There were nothing actually to do with my son. It was to do with other things in the school.
Yeah.
And that had a bearing on it. And we were also moving, and we didn't know how long we were going to be where we were moving to. So I didn't want him to go into a school and come out of a school again. Yeah. And start another one. And also, I'd read, there was an article in the local paper about a year before we started home educating about a local home educating family. And it was the first time I'd ever heard of it, because this is late 80s, early 90s. And I'd already kind of looked a little bit at alternatives, and I just thought that was a great idea. But yeah, and that's kind of how it came about, really. And then my younger two, because there's a big age gap between my first and my second, it's because I was already home educating. Well, I'd already home educated him. I was already involved in the local home ed community. It was just a natural progression.
So did they, were they home educated from the off then?
Yes, they were. My younger two have never been to school.
By the time you were educating the other two, given the age gap, was he still at home or had he moved out by then?
When my youngest was born, he was still at home, but he had finished. He was coming to the end of home education. When was she born? He was born in 84. She was born in 2001. So he went to college at 16. So he was at college.
Yeah.
He started college just before she was born. And I would go to home ed groups. He wouldn't come to home ed groups anymore when he was 16. And I would go to home ed groups pregnant.
Yeah.
But they all knew me. Everybody yeah. knew me. This was the thing, because it was such a small community. So when my daughter was born, we were still involved in the home education community. Yeah. And even though we couldn't go, we didn't do workshops, we didn't do,
yeah.
you know, there wasn't much to do. There weren't many groups anyway. So I just put out, we had a phone tree. Or whatever it was in those
yeah,
days, but
yeah.
we did. I would put out right. We are going to swim in every Monday afternoon. I would take this baby swimming at the same time, and other home and just say we're doing this. And if anybody who's home educating wants to come and meet us in the baby pool, please come along. And they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because I guess either way, that's the nice thing. Like, the nice thing for the community is there's still somebody who's been home educating for a good long length of time at that point.
Yeah.
And they're still available, you know, they're still around.
Yeah.
And they're still, you know, so yeah, so you could, I guess the thing is, as like a new home educator, you could yeah. go and have a swim with you lot and pick your brain. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or I'll just ask you, well, how does this work? Oh, I'm really scared about whatever, like we all do when we're new.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and you know, and like you were a veteran home educator at that point, but you were also available. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you were still in the
you were having a pause from being in the midst of it because you had a very small person, but you were, you know what I mean? You hadn't left.
No, yeah, I was still definitely, I would, and I wasn't one of these who said, yes, she is being, because I know there's the thing about being home educated from birth. It's,
yeah.
There's all these discussions.
Yeah.
It wasn't a matter of that. It was very much like she is going to be home educated because in my mind it was, you start, home education starts at 5.
Yeah.
Because my son started school at 5.
Yeah.
There was no reception. There wasn't this sending them to school at 3 in a uniform in the 1980s.
No.
5 was when you started school. So in my mind, 5 was when you started anyway, even though we were doing, obviously, you know, that whole kind of letters, numbers, colours, whatever it is your children learn from being at home. We were doing all that. You know, she was being educated. With it being such a big age gap, 16-year age gap, it was like a first baby again, in a way. You know, it was, so it was, yeah.
I think the thing is, there is a grey area between, like, yeah, you, it's not like you go, oh, we're just going to play, but you're not going to learn anything at all until the beginning of September. But at the same time, there can be, you know, I have essentially done a lesson plan for my 3-year-old. Yeah. And I think some people are just very, sometimes some people are very eager to start, and there's plenty of, you know, both you and I know there are plenty of stuff out there if you want to homeschool preschool, like,
yeah, well, that's it, you know. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, with my youngest, so this is the approach I had with my daughter, and then because it's a 4-year age gap, she was 6, sitting down doing lap books, and he made his first lap book when he was 2.
Yep.
You know, and it was more, and I would say definitely before he was 5, he definitely, actually, because we were doing 5 in a row before then, I did use letter of the week curriculum off the internet with him, you know, and it was more of a means of finding a way to include him and provide him with something he wanted, rather than because he wanted to join in with his sister, rather than sitting down saying, okay, my child is 2, I need a curriculum for him. Do you know what I mean? It's a slightly different approach. So I've kind of come at it from lots of different angles. And I do understand what people say when they say home educating from birth. I really do.
Yeah.
But it's that sort of legal technicality that you get into, isn't it? You know, that. Yeah, at what point?
Yeah. Well, and I think also, one of the things coming out of this is like every kid is different, and what you end up doing, like, and in a way, each kid's experience is different.
Yes, definitely.
I remember when we were looking into this before I had my eldest, and I read lots of Wardle stuff. We didn't really follow Wardle like in the end of it, but you know, I read quite a lot of stuff, and as you do, you know, you go, oh, this looks interesting, and you follow that pathway for a bit.
Yeah.
And I remember there was somebody I used to follow on there was saying about, I know this activity says it's for 5-year olds, but if your eldest is 5, it's going to be too much for them. This is for like them being carried along by older children, and like,
yeah,
I already had another baby at this point and was like, well, I don't understand. I don't understand what you mean. But I've got 3 now.
Yeah.
I totally understand what they mean.
Absolutely.
You know, the youngest, my youngest, was very similar in that there's 2 years between each of mine.
Yeah.
And she was just like, well, my brother and sister can do that, so I can do that. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, once she could count, I was like, oh, the thing is, she probably actually could tackle the beginning of, you know, the maths that we were using.
Yep.
Like, if she wants to, if she'd been like, I'm not interested, I just want to go and play, I wouldn't have been like, no. Child who was not, you know, who has not finished nursery yet, who has not finished preschool, no, you are going to sit down and do your maths. It was like, but if you're interested and you want to be like your brother and sister, well, we're going to match up, you know, we're going to do this page of maths work, for want of, you know. And I never would have done that with my eldest.
No.
But he wasn't being pulled along. He wasn't being influenced by 2 other kids going, oh, I could do this. You know what I mean? And I'm going to tell you about it and whatever.
Yeah.
It does make a massive difference, doesn't it?
It does make a massive difference, definitely. Yeah. So they kind of get the head start in a way, but then I felt at the end, it's kind of lost out a little bit when my daughter got to do GCSEs, and we started that sort of very formal, very structured you have no choice, study.
Yeah.
It was, I felt like that kind of negatively impacted on his experience, if you like.
Did it limit his freedom? Is that what you mean?
Yes, it did limit the freedom. It limited, because yes, it limited all our freedom.
Yeah.
And it meant as well, whereas they'd always done projects together.
Yeah.
He kind of, suddenly he's doing things by himself. And then when she started college at 16, that was another little wrench. And that was hard. That's been hard for him. And now he's going through that whole kind of structured pre-exam study himself. So, you know, it's like he's had it twice. Well, she only had it once.
So can you, if we're talking about GCSEs, would you mind going through how you guys tackled GCSEs?
Okay, yeah. I won't talk about my eldest because that was irrelevant. It's so long ago. Things have changed so much.
Right.
So for my daughter, she wanted to do, we knew she wanted to do music at college.
Yeah.
So that very much influenced the decisions that we made in regard to the GCSEs that she was taking.
Yeah.
And she also did a lot of music grades because she knew that's what she wanted to do.
Yeah.
I did spend probably from being about 12 or 13, when she was 12 or 13, I was ringing around all the local colleges, starting to talk to people, the admissions people.
Yeah.
And asking them about, you know, how many GCSEs she would need for this course, what would they accept these other qualifications that she'd got, because she's done an arts award.
Yeah.
I can't remember. And she's got other bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And the different colleges worked in different ways. We had three colleges locally that take them for like that further education, sixth form years. One of them we quickly struck off our list because they were very much like, well, we don't think IGCSE English is as hard as GCSE English, so we won't accept that as a GCSE, and we will make them resit a test of our devising to make sure that they can keep it up to it.
Ew.
So we crossed them off.
Yeah.
And then there was another one that was definitely, we only want lots of GCSEs. We're not even going to look at these other things. And then the third one, which was fortunately the one that we liked the best locally.
Yeah.
They were like, yes, bring her for an interview. Because I'd spoken to them and they originally worked on a point system. So when I spoke to them and I'm like, well, she's not going to have taken 11 GCSEs. She's only going to have taken 3, maybe 4. And she's got the music grades and she wants to do music. What will you do? Because she's not going to get all these points.
Yeah.
And they just said, well, we'll extrapolate. I said, brilliant, that's great. A year later, they changed it.
Oh,
they didn't do points anymore. But because I'd already spoken to them and he remembered me, they said, yes, bring her for an interview. And she'd done loads of stuff. She'd got a pretty good CV. She'd got a Duke of Edinburgh. She'd done years of commitment with scouts and a choir and all sorts of things. She'd done volunteering in the library. She'd done all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So despite not having a lot of GCSEs, she'd still got quite a good CV.
Yeah.
And they made her an offer. In the meantime, we actually applied to a college of music in Leeds, a city nearby. And that was based on, they made the same offer. I mean, she had an audition and she went there. So we kind of approached it from, you'll do English and maths.
Yeah.
Because my eldest said, actually, that is, my eldest son did say, whatever happens, they need to at least have their English and maths GCSEs, mum.
Yeah.
Like, right, okay, we'll do that. You know, adult grown-up children, I think you need to listen to them, really. So
yeah.
I did.
Yeah, totally.
So that was it. So she ended up with 3 GCSEs and a lot of music grades, and she went off and did 2 years at college on a BTEC. She wanted to do a level 3. There was absolutely no point in her doing anything less than a level 3.
Yeah.
And she passed it with absolute flying colours. So that was my daughter. That's how we approached GCSEs with her. And this time, for my son, who is a very different kettle of fish. We're looking at doing two GCSEs this next session. That was, so that'd be 2020.
Yeah.
In the summer of 2020.
Yeah.
And if all goes according to plan, he will do two more the following January and then do two more the following summer in 2021.
Right, yeah.
And then he will go to college, providing he passes and gets in.
Yeah.
He'll go to college that September 2021 to do A-levels.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's wanting to do. You know, it was a bit easier for my daughter. She knew she had a fixed goal.
Yes.
And he's not very sure, so we're just trying to get a good range that will cover all bases, really. And six GCSEs should get him into any of the colleges.
Yeah. So are you doing IGCSEs then, yeah?
Yes, we're doing some IGCSEs. We're doing, he's going to do IGCSEs for geography and sciences, because we can't do GCSEs for that, yeah. And English language. But he will do GCSE maths, definitely.
Yeah.
My daughter, actually, she also went to, because our local colleges don't do the 14 to 16.
Ah.
They refused. I did try. Yeah. I did try. They weren't having it. So she had to go to another town, which meant driving her. And she did her GCSE English at the college.
Right.
The problem with doing it there was that they only actually did a resit course rather than a course that was from scratch.
Yes.
So that caused some problems. She passed. She got it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was quite hard. And it was nice for her, though, because she was there with three other girls who were home educated, who knew each other.
Oh, that's cool.
And so they kind of got quite friendly, and that was a really nice experience. And it was a very good stepping stone for her into a full-time college, because she'd never been to school.
But
my son doesn't want to do that. So we're at home all the way.
But as you say, that's the nice thing about, you know, you do get to tailor that experience, you know, to what each child wants and what they're aiming for, kind of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, there's not really any other way to do it.
No.
You know, they need to be, if they want to do GCSEs, and they need to be on board with it. Otherwise, they're not going to get anywhere anyway, and you're just wasting time and money. So, you know, because at the end of the day, they're quite expensive.
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, they need to be ready for them, ready to do them themselves.
Yeah.
Even if they're not ready to pass them, they need to be ready to go and sit them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they're the ones who have to take the actual exam.
Well, yeah.
No, it's just useful, I think, because obviously everyone always asks about GCSEs.
Yes.
And, you know, and it's nice to be able to, you know, one of the things I'm trying to do in the podcast is collect people's experiences a bit to do with GCSEs, so that just people have different, they can see how different home educators do it, and they can see that it's not just the kind of school way of, yeah, you're going to do nine and you're going to do them over 2 years, and it's, you know, you're not going to start until you're 14, but just sort of see that some people take them earlier, some people do them in shorter amounts of time. Yeah, you know, all of that kind of thing.
Well, that's it. I mean, my daughter, she, what did she do? We'd always do it. She took the maths a year earlier than she would have done in school.
Yeah.
Mainly because they were changing the curriculum.
Oh, yeah.
So when they were when I knew that they were going to change this curriculum, it was like, right, you are going to take it this year. We'd not really studied the GCSE. We'd studied kind of up to pre-GCSE, but we'd not studied the actual GCSE stuff. But it was a case of, you're going to go in for it this year, and chances are you're not going to pass it.
Yeah.
But it means you get to resit it with the old curriculum.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's what we did. We decided in January this is what we were going to do.
Right.
We booked her into the exam. We bought a kind of, I'm not a big fan of CGP books, to be honest, but for revision, at this point, they did a really good job. We made sure she got the CGP book. We went through everything that was up to grade C.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff that was grade B.
Yeah.
Just to see, you know, just to pat it out, see what you get there. And off you go. Go get the go do the exam. I'm thinking she's going to come out with a D. Keep on studying after the exam, after she's taken the exam, with a view to resit it and getting a better grade.
Yeah.
So she did this from January to May.
Yes.
She studied this CGP book and she only went and got a C.
Of course.
She passed it and she wouldn't go and resit it. So I was like, oh, okay. So, and I think then what happened, she did very similar with a geography exam. She kind of ummed and ahed, messing about, not doing it. And then when she got these offers from colleges that said, yes, you need to pass this GCSE for us to accept you.
Yeah.
Did it in 5 months and passed it really well. And so it was like, okay, that's great. but my son's very different. So we'll just, it's kind of a definitely wait and see what's going to happen. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah.
It's much steadier. And whereas she was very sort of, I'm taking this off and I'm doing it by myself.
Yeah.
We're very much doing it together.
Yeah.
It's quite different. So fingers crossed that we get there.
Oh, you'll get there whatever happens. I mean, that's just, you know, it's how you get there, but that's okay.
Well, yes, that's true.
So I feel like we need to go back to the actual main body of the questions.
Oh, yes, let's.
Oh, yes, there are questions in here. What do you love about home education?
Oh, gosh. What do I love about it? I love the learning.
Yeah.
I love being with my children while they learn. I love seeing them learn and experiencing their, you know, being with them when they experience that sense of achievement. Yeah. And I love how much I've learned as well.
Yeah.
You know, my own learning and my own attitude to learning has really changed over the course of 20 odd years. And realizing that I can learn, that I like learning, and passing that on to my children, you know, and seeing even my adult son when I go and visit him and he's showing me what he's been doing and the things that he's learning. Yeah. Your home education never stops. It never stops. You know, it's just, it becomes a way of life. And I'm not sure it's because, I'm not saying that other people don't continue to learn, but I do, there's a bit of a mind shift into how you view the learning.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Mm. I think it's because you have more control over it rather than being like, I mean, my memory of being in school, and I was a good student in school, but was, you know, you're going and it's like, come on, tell me stuff. Like, what am I doing today? How do you want me to perform? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And home education's not like that. Like, you might open up your maths curriculum or whatever and be, oh, okay, right, they want us to do this thing. But it's not the same thing. You're not a sponge. Like, you have control over it.
Yeah.
If nothing else, at any point of the day, you can kind of go, well, why does that thing happen? And, well, let's go and find out. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Let's look it up. Or let's, see a video about it or whatever, and then you go off. Which you can't do in school.
No, you can't. And home education has made learning exciting.
Yeah.
I think. I'm just so excited by learning, by their learning, by my learning, by the things we learn as a family, by learning more about them as well, you know, because you're with them all the time. So you're always learning something new about each other. As they learn new things, you know, they surprise me with things that they know, things that they've learnt, you know, it's always a surprise. And it's lovely. It's great. I love it.
So what's the hardest part?
The hardest part, juggling.
Yeah.
Juggling. Definitely. The hardest part is because I have to work as well, so it's working, home educating, housework, garden, all the things that you have to do in your life. It's really hard juggling all that.
Yeah.
So yeah, the housework generally loses, I'll just say.
There's always something more interesting than the housework, I find.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
How do you make that easier?
Housework.
The juggling rather than the housework. Juggling.
Oh, my. Right, well, it's gotten easier as they've gotten older.
Yeah.
Definitely. They've always, part of their little morning routine, part of our morning is always been that they've had jobs that they do. And because it's in part of the sort of like education part of their day.
Yeah.
It's not been, there's not been much kickback on it.
Yeah.
I've always approached it as we do it as a team. So, you know, it's like washing up. I wash. Somebody else will side. When they were little, one would side the crockery, one would side the cutlery. And we sort of divvy the jobs up like that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we worked. So, yeah. And then as they got older, when they were little, the juggling. I get up earlier to do it than they do to work.
Yeah.
If I'm writing or marking, I get up before them. And then I would rope my mum in because I do tutoring as well. So my mum would have my kids and take them out for tea, or I try and do it when they go to the dad's, that kind of thing. It kind of works. And as they've got older, I've been able to take on more work. So yeah, I don't know. Just do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no solution. There's no, well, you do it like this and then it'll all fall into place.
Oh, absolutely not. No, it doesn't work. You know, it really doesn't. And it's fine. You know, this thing, like, I get up and for a while I'll get up 2 hours earlier.
Yeah.
And that works really well. And I get loads of writing done. I get loads of work done. And
yeah.
And then suddenly that all goes to pot, and I'll have a couple of weeks where I'm getting up half an hour earlier, you know, not getting any work done at all, but at least they've got breakfast when they get up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just kind of, so it's really hard to maintain any kind of momentum as well sometimes. But yeah, in that kind of juggling thing, but we seem to work. Okay. I'm not sure. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, you might need to wipe some of that out, actually.
Well, no, I think the thing is, it's always about, like, I always find that it's like it is really hard to maintain something over a long period of time. Like, to go, this is my morning routine. Like, it's going to be your morning routine, you know, from January through to December, like year after year. And it isn't. It works for you for a bit, and then you have to, then it falls apart, and you have to reassess it and change things round and whatever. And I wouldn't want to have the same setup every single day forever. No. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, totally. So I mean, like, that sounds like home education to me anyway. You know, you change it and you do this for a bit, then you change it again.
Yeah. Right. So it is, it's just like, I think it's like when you want to do stuff, or like the stuff you have to do or whatever, it is a juggle, isn't it? It's just about kind of like, and remembering to keep yourself in the mix so that you're not just completely, not just burning yourself at both ends, but basically just like launching yourself into flame, you know? Yeah. So like, okay, I can do this much, but I can't do any more than that kind of thing.
I think you're right. And it is learning to say no, you know, it's sometimes you do just have to say no to things.
Yeah.
And not just take on more things, like you were saying before, running people around everywhere and stuff like that. Sometimes you just have to say, no, we've got enough on. We can't do that anymore. Yeah. And sometimes I have to let the kids say no as well.
Yes.
Been doing, if they've been doing classes and things for a while, you get to the point, if they've tried it and they've, you know, enjoyed it for a bit and then it's not working anymore, you know, you have to accept that sometimes letting them say no works as well.
Sometimes that's hard when you've got into a rhythm of it, or you feel like it's a worthy thing that they're doing, and it's like, well,
yes. Very recently we started a book group, a little local book group, and to be, for the life of me, I can't remember how long it's been running, but it's been running about 10 years at least,
right?
And it's just down our road, and we've been going from the beginning.
Yeah.
My son recently has just gone, I don't want to go anymore. And we went to the last set. We went and we said to everybody, he wants to give up now, come in. And obviously, there's like the families have all changed and there's a lot of younger kids. And
yeah.
I mean, there was his friend there who was the same age as him as well. But the families that were all there to start with, they've all moved on, and yeah. As they do as the kids get older. And they said, no, come back, we need cake. So we went back for one more session for cake, and it was really, really lovely. But I felt really, really sad.
Yeah.
It's this whole wrench of like, oh, I've been doing this once a month for the last 10 years and I'm not going to be doing it anymore. And it was really sad.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I know I've got a few more of these to come over the next couple of years as well.
I think it's harder, yeah, because you get into the routine. Like, I'm thinking of some groups that we did, like, you know, kind of like there were sort of baby groups we did when my youngest was little that the other two were allowed to, they could kind of come along to and things.
Yeah.
And you get into this routine, and then when it stops, you're like, oh, we're never going to do that again.
Yeah.
And the kids don't care. They've moved on to the next thing. Like, they've already made their peace with it. And it is really hard as a parent. I mean, God, my eldest is 11. So I haven't had to deal with anybody leaving home or stopping home educating or whatever. So, like, you know, but even those little bits, it's like, this is part of the job. And this is the bit that really sucks and hurts, you know.
Yeah. And the little markers, aren't they? The little markers that they're growing up and...
Yeah.
Your time with them is passing, and it's like, oh.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's really good as well, because to feel so sad about something like that just shows how much you've enjoyed it. You know?
Well, yeah. And also, I think it's just like, you know, I think you have that a few times, and it reminds you that it's not like you can't grasp hold to every, you know, Tuesday morning thing that you do or whatever, because life just gets busy and some of it you just do sort of on rote. But you know, it reminds you to kind of look and be like, this is how we are right now, because you know it's not going to stay like that, because they keep growing and changing, and they grow and change much quicker than we do as adults.
Yes, they do. Yeah,
and so we're the ones who have to kind of keep up, and that's not always pleasant.
I know. And the problem is, the older you get, the harder it is to change too. Oh, that could be just me.
I don't know. No, I don't think so. Is there a typical day in the life?
Currently, our typical day in the life is I get up. Before the kids, and I will try and do some work. That is my typical day. Then my daughter she'll send me a text to make a cup of tea before she goes to college or work, depending what day of the week it is.
Excellent.
So we have breakfast together, and then she goes off and I do a little bit more work before my son gets up, and then we do some, because I've already had my breakfast, so while he has breakfast I read to him. Currently, so that tends to be either a chapter book or currently it's history, because he likes history, but he's not studying it for exams, so we can have that's our nice free flow bit.
Oh, kind that's of cool
thing. So we like to have that, and then it's kind of like, okay, today you've got, because he's doing he does maths every morning. We've been doing maths for the first half hour every morning since he was four.
Yep.
And we do year round as well. We don't do school holidays, so it pretty much is, unless he's going somewhere or we're going out, it pretty much is every single morning maths for half an hour.
Yep.
And then after that, we might look at is English, because this is something, even though that's not one of the first exams he's going to be taking, that is something that needs skills that develop along the way. So we'll do some of that, and then he'll do some geography. We're not on the GCSE curriculum for science yet, so we're still looking at key stage three stuff for that, so we'll work through some of that perhaps. And I've been quite influenced with these two, like with Charlotte Mason things, so that idea of short lessons, lots of reading aloud, and that tends to be how we do things. We kind of read it aloud together, look at the questions, or he will do some writing. And so our mornings are very sort of, this is our focused time together. Then, and it's always been like that, really. When they were little, we'd have the focus time together, we'd do the maths, then we'd do, we did a lot of literature-based unit studies. So we'd start with that, and then we'd do whatever. And it was nice. And then they'd play all afternoon.
Yep.
So we missed that. We don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
So we carry on, we have lunch, and then we'll do some more stuff. And it might be, if he's managed to get things done in the morning, he might work on his own little projects that he's got going. Quite often he will test things for me. If I've written a lap book, I will get him to do the lap book for me just to make sure it works.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, so he's pretty good at helping me with that. And it's a good way of sneaking in some extra bits.
Yeah.
And then it kind of gets to about late afternoon, you know, and then he'll disappear off and go and do some reading of his own or play on his PlayStation for a bit, and I'll do some more work and make tea, and then my daughter comes in, and we like to we watch a lot of films and binge watch things on Netflix together.
Oh, that's nice.
It is nice. It really is nice. And that's kind of a typical day. But in amongst that, we have other things that he does, like home ed groups that we go to as well. So it's kind of like a more of a typical week, if you like, which are sort of his home ed groups are more sociable. He doesn't go to classes or academic groups as such,
yeah.
Really. We keep the academics at home, and he goes out and does other things like archery. Dungeons
oh, cool.
and Dragons and games group, and we have a themed group that runs once a month, and that's been running since the month before he was born.
Aww.
So he's been going to that all his life, and he's missed 3 sessions, I think, in all his life.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, so it's quite, it's nice. It's nice.
That's really nice.
Yeah. So yeah. That's kind of where we're at. He goes to his dad's once a week or so. Yeah. And we try and fit in family visiting and other things as well in our week. So, yeah. So, it's again, it's a juggling, making sure we get all the academics done and make sure we get the things that the other things that we need to do that are life, you know, and, you know, we're grandparents and grandchildren. And. Trying to fit all that in.
Are they nearby or are they?
Yes, they're not very far. It's about a 15-minute drive.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, so it's really handy. Yeah.
So what's going on for home educators in your area? And how has that changed, actually? That's, you know.
Right, well, when we started way back when, there was the only regular group was once a month for a couple of hours in like a council building in like their child guidance that centre. They gave us a room and it was quite nice. We'd got like a little room and then like the big playroom with all the toys in.
Oh yeah.
And we used to meet there once a month for 2 hours, and that was through the local, she was the local representative for education otherwise, like the contact, local contact. And then from there, and that had been going on a good few years before we started going along to it. When we did start going along, I think my eldest was probably about 12 or 13, and a few of us met, and then and we were going regularly. And so we started an art group from there, and we met at somebody's house once a month as well for this for an art session. And that was lovely. We sort of went along. We had this shared lunch. And they sort of did some artwork, and then they played out in their very large garden. And it was lovely. And then from that group, when my daughter was born, so my eldest son was no longer home educated by this point. When my daughter was born, I went swimming every week with her at the same time on a Monday. And I still went to this monthly Thursday group.
Yeah.
And people... we would come and join us to go swimming.
Yeah.
And from that, we met some more people, and as she got a little older, she was three. When she was three, we were talking about what we wanted, what kind of group we wanted. And there was, not in our town particularly, but in surrounding towns, because it's quite built up where we are, and towns are quite easy to get to. There were sort of like free play groups and things like that, you know, free play session, home ed sessions for free play. So we wanted something a little more structured, and a group of us got together. We found a venue where we could have some storage and meet once a month. And so we came up with, we do themed sessions. And this is the group that my son's been to all his life.
Yeah.
So my kids were 3 and not quite born when we started.
Yeah.
We've gone all the time to this group. And some of, out of those original families, most of them kept coming, actually, for a very long time. We had, we did a 10th anniversary one a few years ago.
Aww.
And some people came back who'd not be, who'd used to come and didn't get a celebration. So that was lovely. But yeah, there's one family who still come, because she also had more children, and they still come. And a lot of new families keep coming, but we've managed to keep it going, and pretty much we've changed venues a couple of times, but it's pretty much still the same concept. We have a different theme every month. We all bring activities to share. We all bring food, so we have a big shared lunch. And it's a feast. It's always a feast. And the kids play in and amongst, but they do the activities as well. So we kind of, you know, more focused table activities in the morning, then lunch, a bit more playing, and maybe, and then more group activities in the afternoon along whatever theme it is. And sometimes we alternate it. The kids pick one month, the parents pick the following month what the theme is. And it's been going for, you know, 15 years nearly.
That's fantastic.
It is. It is. And I love it. I love it. It's a lovely group. It's really lovely. So, yeah, so there's that. And then there's a games group, because I'm quite good at organising stuff.
I think home edders get very good at organising stuff very quickly.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know I could do that. I do now.
Yeah, totally.
So, and we have a monthly game session in a local game shop that I've organised as well. And the book group as well that I mentioned, that's still going. That's once a month. And the game session is once a month. What else do we do? And there's a weekly archery session that we go to. I didn't even organise that. and other, there's a lot of things we don't go to, because with him being 14, a lot of them are for younger children.
Yeah.
So there is a weekly group not very far away from us in, that meets in a village hall. But I think most of the children are there are under 8s. And that started as a group for people with under 5s who were looking to home educate. And, of course, as that age range, as those children have aged, so has the age range of the group. And I assume it will continue to do so. And that's been running a few years. Somebody organises, I believe there are some art classes at a local centre, like an art centre place, and I think they've organised different art classes there. There was a monthly park meetup, but I'm not sure if that runs through the winter. What else is there? Oh, that's a really good question. I can't think now. Oh, I think somebody started a forest school as well. That meets, and then there were some kind of outdoor bushcrafty things going on somewhere else. But my son, so I think we've got two of those kind of things going on. But my son's not interested in any of that kind of thing, so I don't really know. And somebody else organised some mere drama sessions, but I think that might have been a short stint. So yes, I'm not sure. There's a lot, and that's just in our little town.
Yeah.
The local Facebook group covers sort of the whole county, and there's loads and loads. So at one point, when my kids were younger, we did go to so much stuff, and I would drive all over the place for gymnastics and different craft groups and different, you know, just various activities and workshops and museums. And but now we've really pulled back from that, because we're doing GCSEs, and because he's older, and teenagers don't really want to go and hang out with little kids all the time.
No, it does seem to quieten down as they get a bit older.
Yeah.
There's more sort of academic, particularly during GCSEs, there's more academic-y stuff to kind of be doing. And they seem to, you know, everyone finds their sort of group of friends or whatever, or the few things they enjoy doing, and you kind of end up sticking to that, I think, don't you? Rather than the sort of, oh, there's a thing going on at the museum, let's all go off and do that kind of thing that you have when they're little.
Absolutely. He's definitely much more sort of like he's got a group of friends and they like doing, they like playing games, they like doing D&D, they like doing the anime, and they all kind of, so they see each other quite regularly.
Yeah.
And that's really nice, you know, and they come to, you know, or they come to the monthly themed group as well. There's quite a few old kids there too, which is good.
Yeah.
We have a teen lounge, so we don't see them. We see them at the, in the beginning for opening circle, and we might see them for a little while when we first get the activities out, and we've all said to them, yes, go and do an activity, two, three, however many, you know, depending what's been brought. And, and then they kind of disappear, come out for lunch, and then disappear again. But it's okay.
But in a way, I can see that doing something like that means that they carry on being involved. They don't nope out of it because they have to just be with everybody else. It can give them some space just to hang out with their mates a bit and still be involved kind of as much as they want. So you don't lose them. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's quite valuable for them, really.
Yeah.
Whether he'd agree with me or not, I'm not sure, but I think it is. I think it would depend on whether how many of the people have come, or, you know, because there has been times we've gone, particularly if it's a holiday or something, and he's the only older child there. It's not been much fun.
That's not as good as when you got your mates around you. You can always go.
No, not at all. But
somewhere and chat about stuff.
Well, that's it. But because I'm kind of one of the main organisers for it, kind of have to go anyway. So, but yeah.
That's when you just sit with your headphones on in the corner and just, you know, your book or whatever.
Well, that's right. He just disappears off into teen lounge by himself.
Exactly.
Plays on his phone.
It's fine. That's all good.
It is. It doesn't do him any harm anyway. No. It's only one day a month.
Yeah, exactly. So the next question is about like resource recommendations for other home eds, but for other home ed parents. But I guess one of the things I'm interested in is like, has there been stuff that like really influenced you as a home ed parent?
Yes. When I very first started out, way back when, I was trying to read around things, and I kind of read the Steiner stuff. I read about Montessori. I read some John Holt. I read that Deschooling Society, the Ivan Ilyich book. That was interesting. Mm-hmm. Not particularly about home ed, but it was interesting for that kind of deschooling process.
Yeah.
What else did I read? A lot of Montessori and Steiner mainly. And then with the two younger ones, because it's like starting again.
Yeah.
It was, again, Montessori I really liked. And we did incorporate some of those ideas into our home. In fact, my son went to Montessori nursery one morning a week for about a year. Mm-hmm. Again, that was part of the juggling.
Yes.
And it was nice because there was a couple of kids there. They would take them up to seven.
Oh, that's good.
There was a couple of kids there whose families were home educating. They were already home educating. So it wasn't, they weren't preparing them for school, which was what put me off the idea of nursery or playgroup.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want them to go to a setting where it was all about, when you're a big girl, you're going to go to school.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. It was, so he went there and he really enjoyed it, but unfortunately it closed down. But it meant that we'd incorporated quite a few, we'd already done, you know, the sandpaper letters and, you know, how to put your coat on and pairing socks and sorting cutlery and all these kind of useful, this idea of giving them useful work.
Yeah.
So we'd already incorporated that into our days. And then I came across Charlotte Mason, and I must admit, it's something I've kind of dipped my toe into. More because it was what I read was short lessons, nature study, read a lot of books. And we kind of already did the nature study and read a lot of books anyway.
Yep.
And so the short lessons was a bit that tweaked it and made sense to me, that sort of did it. And I wish I'd have come across it earlier. I wish I had come across Charlotte Mason when they were a lot younger.
Yeah.
But that was fine. It was fine. We just carried on doing what we did. And by this point, I'd already, of course, read about unschooling, knew about autonomous education. Yeah. So from there, that's kind of reading I did myself.
Yeah.
Oh, and then somebody, there was the Sue Patrick's Workbox system.
Oh, yes.
So, and I read that and loved it. And we kind of already did a little thing mix up. We called it a packet. And I would give my daughter, she loved it. She loved it, loved it, loved it. And she'd have this packet, like, you know, those clear plastic things that you put in A4 folders. That's all it was.
Yes.
And it would have in there some bits of paper with worksheets on, activities, things to draw, little notes for stories that we were going to read or games we were going to play. And she loved it. She loved it. So this work, when we came across the Workbox system, it just kind of was that on a larger scale.
Yeah, totally.
And we used that. I did never use 12 boxes. She recommends 12. We only ever had 6.
Yeah.
And I would break things down so that one activity might, you know, or one subject might break down into 2 or 3 boxes. And they enjoyed that for a while. We did that for quite a while. And that was quite useful for juggling with such a wide, because they were 4 years apart. That made it easier to juggle what they were doing. What else did we do? We used 5 in a row. That was a massive influence on our whole home education life. And for maths, I've always used, well, not always, but for the last 10 years, we've been using MEP maths.
Oh, yes.
Which has been very useful. It will need tweaking a little now. Yeah. We're at GCSE because it's the old curriculum.
Yeah.
So I will need to tweak it a little bit when we come to the end of that. But no, it's been very good for both of them. And they're both maths. They've both got a different style for maths. But yeah. So I think those are my main recommendations in regard to resources.
Excellent. I will put all those in the show notes.
Yeah. Oh, and lap books. Lap books. We did millions. Millions of lap books.
We should segue into the lap books you make.
Oh, yes, we should.
Because you make things that home educators might be very interested in.
Well, I hope they are. Yes.
For them, so you better hope they are.
Yes. Well, I make lap books and I also do literature-based unit studies.
Yes.
As well. And this is because I came about doing that because we were using so many, because one of the lap book sites we used a lot was Homeschool Share, which is lots and lots of free lap books. But it's very American. And so I was having to tweak them for content and for spelling and for vocabulary. And I found I was putting quite a lot of work into doing this. So I needed to make something that was more British, that suited my children better. And the 5 in a row stuff also had a massive influence. We loved that way of learning with the picture book, literature-based unit studies. But again, it's so American. They knew much more about American states and American history than they did about British history and British geography. And that's why I started writing my own materials, really.
So where can people find your stuff and what sort of stuff do you have?
They can find my stuff at, there's a Picture Book Explorers website, and there's also a Picture Book Explorers Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And they can find me online on Facebook at Branch Out World, because that's what my business name is, to be a bigger umbrella. So Picture Book Explorers, right, okay. So the idea is I've chosen picture books that I've either come across in the library or I bought them in charity shops. There are 1 or 2 that I've specifically had to buy off Amazon because the main premise of them is that the picture books, can sort of open it up into geography by either being set in a place in the British Isles.
Yeah.
Or the either the author or the illustrator has got a connection to the British Isles.
Yeah.
So that you've got that geographic focus,
yeah,
as your starting point. And then there's some history as well. So on the first day, you look at geography and history. And I try the later picture book, the ones that I've written later, have got more practical hands-on geography activities. So you might like, you know, we make one of them includes learning about how Lake Windermere was formed.
Oh, cool. So
it involves Play-Doh and plasticine and ice cubes.
Excellent.
And so, yeah, so, and I tried to make it so that most of the activities are things that you've got in your house.
Yeah.
Apart from the one that springs to mind that I know you have to go to the shop for is picture book, was the Paddington one. And there's something to do with, I can't remember what it's called, the stuff you bleach your hair with, hydrogen peroxide.
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And there's a science activity in there that uses that. So I did have to go to the chemist to buy that. But yeah, so mostly it's things that you can, that are accessible and it's written for families to do. So it's a lot, I think Blue Peter.
Yes.
Rather than a worksheet.
Yes.
There are written activities in there as well, creative writing, and there are lap booking pieces and there are maps and sometimes there's puzzles or games. And so you sort of cover geography and history in one day, then you'll look at language and the text in the picture book on the next day, then you look at the artwork. So again, this kind of the Charlotte Mason thing comes in with these, because it's like picture study and narration are also incorporated into them. And then the science, which can often include some kind of nature study, mm-hmm. But might also be, you know, boil a kettle and look at steam, or
yeah,
get the hydrogen peroxide out and make some foam. And so you've got science activities going on there. And then the last day, there's always a maths activity, which is a practical maths activity that relates directly to the story. So it's like applied maths.
Yeah.
And then I've tried to include recipes. The majority of them are regional, but one or two for the best Christmas present in the world, the recipes are seasonal.
Right.
And then there are other ideas. So there might be extra crafts, or it might be let's look at occupations if it's about a farmer, or it's suggestions of places to go and visit. So I try to look up like different museums that might have something related,
yep,
to the study, or ideas of places to go and visit, you know. Further reading, there's also a book list, and I try and include films as well if possible, or videos, TV programs, because we're quite big on watching films in our house.
Yeah.
We use a lot of films for education purposes. So there's all that kind of thing going on in there. And it can be done, you can do it completely by just talking to each other.
Yeah.
Discussion and practical activities. Or if you want to write things down, there are printables in there as well that you can use, you know. And it's there's a lot of suggestions for each day, so that you can pick and choose the ones that are going to work best for your family. And the idea as well is that they can be used with different ages children at the same time, so it's family, it's a,
yeah,
family learning package. And so the fact sheets are in there. Research is done for you, so that hopefully even the parents might learn something. Because believe me, I learn a lot while I'm writing them.
I
love it. So that's my picture book explorers. There is one chapter book explorer, but it took so long to pull it together. I've never quite got round to doing another one. And
it's
that's
much bigger. I saw that. It's a mm-hmm. much. I mean, the picture book ones are, you know, they're a really good size, obviously, because they've got all of those things in them. But the,
yeah,
chapter book one has a lot more in it in comparison.
Oh, it has loads. It's absolutely got loads. It's
such
a massive study if you were going to do it all.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, it's kind of like I kind of put it together and then we pulled little bits out to do.
Yeah.
For ourselves, the bits that they liked, rather than it being you're going to do everything. It's more like I'm offering you a plate. I'm offering you a plate of learning. You choose.
Yes.
If you like.
Yes. It's a buffet.
Yes, it's a buffet. Yes.
One of the things I like is on the website you have like samples for each one. So you can actually just have a get a feel for what's inside. You're not coming to it blind when you're actually, shopping. Basically.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like a good idea to me to do that.
Totally.
And there's some free things on there as well, but they're really kind of like little extra worksheets that I've made or my kids have designed as well. There's a couple on there that they've done.
Sure.
And there is a free lap book for camping and that's quite a nice one to do. It's like a mini one. So the lap book, the pieces are really small, so you can fit it onto a single A4 card. Because if you're going camping, you don't really want to take great big things with you.
That is true.
That was my little idea with that. So the lap books are more focused on one subject.
Yeah.
They're not as cross-curricular. And depending on the topic of the lap book, it'll depend whether there's usually a science activity in all of them, actually.
Yeah.
And there's all, obviously, lap books involve writing, so there's always English in there.
Yeah.
But they're sort of more topic-based, and they are not as focused on Great Britain, if you like.
Yeah.
So they're a bit more sort of global. And they will, and they're good to write as well. And they go up to the Pitch Book Explorers are age 5 to 10. That's kind of the estimated age. That's what they're aimed at, but you can adjust it as well. You know, they can be extended either direction.
Yeah.
And the lap books go up to 14, although I've done one kind of little tiny sort of, it's more a folder thing than a lap book thing. It's like a mini one. The GCSE geography, because it helped my son with a particular point, so I just put it together and put it on the site there. So I'm trying to incorporate a bit more of that as I'm going. My kids have done all the Pitch Book Explorers.
Yeah.
And they've done most of the lap books too. But some of them have been written for other people, so they've not done all of the lap books.
Yeah.
They're there. And if people have got questions, they can contact me through the website, or they can join the Pitch Book Explorers group on Facebook and ask questions in there. I'm always happy to answer anybody's questions.
Excellent. I will have the links to those also in the show notes, so you can get to those. Do you have any book recs for read alouds and things?
Oh, now that's a really good question. I've got millions, but I will pare it down. A lot of reading aloud,
of course,
over the years. And we've done some really, really good ones because of the book group, actually. That was really good because different parents had different ideas of books. We came across a lot of books that we'd never heard of before that were really good. Definitely the classics. They're really good read alouds because they're quite a challenge to read to yourself as a child.
Yeah.
But the story and the plot and the characters, they just love them. So we've read, let me see which ones went down particularly well. The Five Children and It series.
Yes.
They really enjoyed those. Railway Children, Pollyanna. Heidi, all three Heidi books, so my youngest son was about 5 when we read those, all three of them, and we had to read them straight after the other. They loved them, even though they're quite sad as well, but they did enjoy them. He also enjoyed Our Island Story. That was a good one. Mm-hmm. And one of my favourites along in that vein is The Fearless Treasure, which is a Noel Stratfield book. Again, it's kind of the story of English history threaded through a time travel one. Yeah, it's lovely.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And let me think what else. Recently, we have finished the series of My Brother is a Superhero. We started the first one when it first came out and we've read all four of, no, five of them. Is there five? Yes, there's five. We've just finished reading the fifth one, and we had to buy them and read them all together. They're very funny. My son would say they're definitely for a younger age group, because he's 14 now, but he has enjoyed listening to them. Probably pitch them about 10 or 12, you know. And if you've got a child like mine who loves superheroes and sci-fi and comics, they're going to love them. They're really funny. The Hobbit, they liked. They liked that much better than the film.
Yeah.
I've not read much Enid Blyton out loud. And I've not read... I wouldn't read Jacqueline Wilson out loud. My daughter loved them. We did listen to an audiobook. She really loved them.
Yeah.
But they're not. And I've enjoyed reading, you know, I'm not saying they're horrible.
No.
But they're not much fun to read out. Most of them are quite depressing.
Yeah.
And there was one called Fatifers and Finifers.
Ooh,
that we read. No, I'd never heard of it. And that was one that came through book group. And it's about an underground land. I can't for the life of me remember who wrote it, but it was very good. We really enjoyed it.
I can see being part of a book, you know, being part of a book group. It's like a hive mind, because everyone's got the books that they loved and the books they want to share and all that sort of stuff that you might not have any of experience of, because, you know, just different family culture or whatever. And you get to kind of swap all these amazing books. That's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, it was. It's been great.
Yeah.
I mean, we've started recently reading the GCSE texts so that we can decide which, because it's different. There's IGCSE English literature and two different GCSE English literatures.
Right.
And they've all got different books.
Yeah.
So we're kind of going through the texts to see which ones he likes the best. But he's really enjoyed To Kill a Mockingbird, and he really enjoyed Lord of the Flies as well.
Yeah.
But yes, I think To Kill a Mockingbird was more... they're both very good books, obviously. So. Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of where we're at. We're at that kind of level. And my daughter stopped wanting me to read aloud to her a couple of years ago, and I was very sad.
Yes.
John Wyndham. He also liked The Chrysalids. Yes. That was good. John Wyndham. We're going to read a few more of those too aloud. Because I want to read them again.
Yes, I can understand that one. My dad's a big John Wyndham fan, and so is my husband. So
yeah, well, they're great books. They're very good. And he loves, and my son just loves the idea of, you know, these kind of dystopian societies and time travel, things like that, you know. So yeah, he actually enjoyed War of the Worlds and stuff like that as well, which again is something that we've read aloud rather than, because it's quite difficult to tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like being a home ed parent has kind of, it's really encouraged me to read the books that I felt pressure to read as a kid and never read.
Yes.
To actually read them out loud as an adult, where I knew I could tackle them and be able to like share them with my kids, so that they don't feel the pressure that they have to read this thing that they feel is just a bit overwhelming to them or whatever. And it's been much nicer way of dealing with it.
It has. It really has, because there were so many books that I looked at as a child, you know, like you said, that you felt this pressure to read them, so I'd look at them, start them and not finish them, and then you end up feeling a bit like, oh, so it's easier to read it aloud to them.
And I mean
he did set himself a challenge to read Treasure Island when he was 11, and he succeeded. And that was very much, he set himself this challenge. But when I was at school, we did, at junior school, we had teachers who read aloud to us every day.
Yes, so did I.
At the end of the school year, school day. And we got some lovely books. I loved all the, oh gosh, what's he called? Is it Alan Garner? Weird Stone of Brisingamen and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And my kids didn't like them. I read them aloud and they were like, no. I'm like, what do you mean you don't want the next one? But it's brilliant.
Oh, it's heartbreaking when something falls flat that you actually care about.
Oh, I know. Oh, and Narnia. Obviously, Narnia. I've read the Narnia books about 10 times. Because I've read them all for myself, and then I read them to my eldest, read them to my middle daughter, and read them to my son when he was little. Then I had to read them all again to him because he'd forgotten them. So it was just like, so I've read them loads and loads and loads. But that's fine because I love them.
Well, I think sometimes when you're, I think sometimes even with Raid Lads, you know, as a family, you kind of go, shall we go back another once round, you know, that series or whatever? And everyone goes, yeah, all right then. And you kind of get stuck in for, you know, a good couple of months or more, kind of, you know.
Well, we do, yeah. I mean, we tried to do this with the Harry Potter books. I read them to myself years ago when they first came out.
Yeah.
And then they've both read them to themselves.
Yeah.
And then they've introduced the illustrated ones. So we started buying those and reading those aloud because we wanted to share them. Yeah, and then they missed a year. So we were gutted because we was like, yes, you're going to get one every Christmas, because it started. The first one came out when at this age my son was, when he would have gone to high school if he was going to go. So it was kind of like it fitted in with his high school years, and then they skipped a year and ruined it for us.
Is that for the fourth one then? Have they skipped?
I think it is
the first three.
Yes, it must be the fourth one. Yeah.
Maybe so the fourth one's massive. And so
this is it. I mean, goodness knows how long it's going to take to get to the end of the series. I've got no idea. But there you go.
I can't imagine how big the Illustrated Order of the Phoenix is going to be.
Oh, I know.
Proper doorstop.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or they'll have to split it into separate volumes, probably. I don't know.
Oh, any opportunity.
Yeah. But by the time they get round to it, my lad will be 30. You know, I'm not sure he's going to come round for an evening of read aloud Harry Potter then.
Oh. You have to kind of go, there'll be a good meal in it. Yep. A bottle of wine.
Yes.
You're a grown up now. We can just hang out.
Yeah.
What would you want someone who doesn't home educate to know about home education?
That's a good question. That we're not weird. That just because we choose to home educate, we're actually not much different. It's just, you know, we're not different from anybody else. We don't think we're better than anybody else. It just suits us. I don't know really. What would I want them to know about home education? That it's not easy, but it's also not as hard as they might think it is.
Yes.
That it's it doesn't have to be like school.
Yes.
And that it's a lot of fun in it, actually, as well. Yeah, I don't really know, actually. A few little answers there, but not a real definitive one. It's, I'd like them to know about that it's not particularly just about home education, but about education in general, that it's not something that happens in set hours.
Yes.
I would like all those kids to know, all those children who are not home educated, who think that home educated kids aren't learning anything because they're not sat in a classroom.
Yeah.
I'd like them to know that they are learning all the time. And I'd like them to realise that. And I would like everybody to be able to encourage their children to recognise the learning that's going on, whether in school or out of school.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely. Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I think it's just, you know, because it's, I think when you're in school, there's the learning you do in school, and then you're done for the day. And then there's the homework you do, and that feels like extra learning. Mm-hmm. But that ignores all the other things that, you know what I mean? That ignores, like, the documentary you sat down to watch. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, watching Planet Earth 2 or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Or the radio program you listened to, or the interview that you heard, or the magazine you were reading that happened to tell you about some random things. Like, that's all learning.
Yeah. It is, yeah. And I think, I know for sure my kids know that.
Yes.
And it did it was a struggle for them at places like Scouts and stuff sometimes because the other kids didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it would have been nice if they could realise and value that learning.
Yeah,
value
totally.
The things they're doing outside school as being part of their learning. But yeah, I don't know.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been a complete pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been lovely. I've had such a nice chat.
Okay, I'm glad.
And there you go. If you want to find out more about any of the things we talk about in this episode or to leave a comment, please go to the show notes on the blog at homeedvoices.co.uk or follow the link on Instagram at homeedvoicespodcast or Twitter at homeedvoices. This is episode 23. If you want to support the show, please rate and review at Apple Podcast as it helps more people to find out about it. The Homeed Voices podcast is an independent production and is created, hosted and produced by me, Katie Hanwelt. The podcast theme tune is Hope for Tomorrow by Seastock. You can subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcast, Google Play, Stitcher, YouTube, or anywhere else where podcasts are found. I'll be back with the end of season episode in 2 weeks, and until then, here's to more Homeed Adventures.